Aloha, it's Dave Lawrence, Hawaii Public Radio, and All Things Considered. Today we are learning more about an exciting journey that we have been recently covering on All Things Considered about a Sumatran rhinoceros. And if you're a regular listener to the show, you know that I've sort of taken a liking to talking about Haripon. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right, and we'll learn if I am in a moment. He was flown from Cincinnati to Sumatra, you may or may not recall, on a mission to breed, reported to be a 53-hour journey in a specially made crate. It, in some ways, shows man at his very best. It's a collaborative effort to preserve a critically endangered animal, and we've got a chance to learn more. It's a privilege to learn more about Haripon and his incredible voyage. We're going to connect with Dr. Monica Stoops. She's on the line. She's part of CREW at the Cincinnati Zoo, and CREW is the zoo's Center for Conservation and Research of Endangered Wildlife. Welcome, Dr. Stoops, or can I call you Monica? Which is best?
Oh, please call me Monica.
Great, and thank you so much for taking some time for us. I appreciate it.
No problem. We're excited that everybody wants to hear about Harry and his journey and the mission he's got ahead of him.
Yeah, no doubt. And so first, paint a picture of what is your role there at the zoo?
My particular role at Cincinnati Zoo is I'm a reproductive physiologist. So in essence, a sex doctor for the animals at the zoo.
And is there any specific kind of animal, or is it for everybody who's there?
We have signature animals at CREW itself that we tend to focus on. So we tend to work with rhinos as well as small cats, polar bears, and otters for some of the species.
And I understand that because of Harry leaving, that's basically the end of the Sumatran rhino program. But I guess I'm reading into what you just said that in addition to those other creatures, you've got other kinds of rhinos there at the zoo.
Yes. So in terms of rhinos, there are five total species of rhinos that range throughout the world. Until recently, we had four species in captivity. But with the departure of the Sumatran rhino to the homeland, we now have three rhino species in captivity.
Okay. At your zoo, at the Cincinnati Zoo, you're talking about?
We currently have two of those species. But in terms of captive populations
anywhere,
exactly.
Okay, wow. And that, and you've answered a bunch of my initial questions. That was fantastic of you. So five total species of rhino. So when we think about any how many kinds of rhinoceros there are, the answer is five. And that's interesting to know because they have some at the Honolulu Zoo, and I'm going to be investigating those now to learn more about them. And when did the Cincinnati Zoo first start working with the Sumatran rhinos?
The Cincinnati Zoo itself started working with Sumatran rhinos when the program was initiated, which was back in the 1980s.
Wow.
And at that point, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature and Natural Resources, as well as the Asian Rhino Specialist Group, believed there was cause to start a breeding program for that particular species. So they mounted an effort to be able to capture individuals that would be part of that program. And one such individual came here to the Cincinnati Zoo by the name of Ipu, who was a very studly guy. And he is the male that's responsible for the three calves that were produced here at Cincinnati Zoo.
And those three calves would be Andalas, Haripon, and then his late sister?
Yes. Suchi was her name.
Suchi. Sorry, I didn't have that one handy. But so three. So you've answered another one of our critical questions. So in the 80s, you started doing it. And the total number of how many of these were born at the zoo is three, which I thought was the case. Of the five species, Monica, are any of the other four endangered?
Yes. So all of the rhino species are threatened with extinction. And in terms of their status, the African black rhino, the Sumatran rhino, as well as the Javan rhino are all critically endangered.
Okay, Sumatran, and then what was the use? African black, the Sumatran, and the Java?
The Javan rhino.
Javan rhino. And then what are the other ones?
The other rhinos are the African white rhinoceros, as well as the Indian rhinoceros.
Okay. And in terms of being found in the wild, of those five, all of them exist somewhere in the wild or not?
Yes, they do.
Okay. And so the Sumatran rhinos, is Borneo where the rhinos that are in Borneo, is that considered Sumatra?
That is actually considered Malaysian. So that would be island Malaysia.
And what would the, I'm saying, what, I guess I didn't ask that right. What kind of rhino? When I was watching a thing on, maybe it was National Geographic, forgive me for not knowing the source, but it was a documentary about Borneo and different animals that live there. And they had rhino featured. Do you know what,
right.
what kind
that
of...
That is Sumatran rhino.
Okay, that lives there too. Okay. And those are wild there? And so they would be wild there and also in Sumatra?
Yes. So in terms of wild rhino populations, there's believed to be just at this point three individuals on the island of Borneo that are in a semi-captive situation. That would be one male and two females that are located there. And then there's believed to just be maybe a handful of individuals that are in the wild. It's still unknown if there actually are individuals remaining in the wild there. And then in terms of the Sumatran population that's on the island of Sumatra, they are believed to be less than 100 individuals that are ranging throughout three national parks.
In terms of their threat from poaching, I was telling someone, we were talking about the Indonesia in general, he said that there's a lot of corruption there. He would fear for the rhino's safety down there. Are those three parks safe? How much poaching is going on?
Poaching was a problem that occurred mainly in the past, but it's a problem right now extensively for African rhino species.
Okay.
And it was an extensive problem for Asian rhino species. With the onset of organizations that are non-governmental over in Indonesia, there's one in particular called Yayasan Badak Indonesia. They partner with International Rhino Foundation, which is based out of the United States. Those two organizations have worked tirelessly, and over the past 7 years, there has been no incidence of poaching in the Indonesian parks for Sumatran rhinos, and that's because they employ rhino protection units. So those are, they have a total of seven of those, and they consist of individuals that are out in the field on a constant basis, and they are monitoring for snares, they're monitoring for encroachment of individuals into there, and then it also takes the work of building up the support for conservation among the local communities, because you need to have buy-in, and you need to also educate the people. There are people there that don't have any concept that there are even rhinos right in the forest where they live, because they are such a secretive animal and aren't seen often.
God bless every one of them. I think it's so amazing that you're so familiar with all these details. It's a testament. Thank God there are people like you out there. What happened to Harapan's mom?
Harapan's mom, Emmy, who was located here at the zoo, did produce the three calves in captivity and laid the basis for understanding how their reproduction actually occurs. One of the things that was found out with them is they're actually induced ovulators, so they actually have to mate in order to ovulate, and that was unknown and kind of different among rhino species. And unfortunately, Emmy passed away several years ago, so she had a condition similar to what her daughter had, in which there was too much iron in the body, which occurs in humans as well. Hemochromatosis is what it is called, and it occurs in several animals in captive situations, such as dolphins. Some bird species are afflicted by it, and sometimes it just varies by individual.
Okay.
But it does tend to be more prevalent in the browsing rhino species. So those species that are more reliant on browse for their diet. So that would be like African black rhinos as well as Sumatran rhinos.
And browse means like the ficus leaves, ficus trees or whatever?
Exactly. So like the twigs and the leaves and the branches versus like if you're a grazer, that's more of a grass.
They're vegetarian?
Oh, completely vegetarian, yes.
Oh, he's such a cutie pie, too. All right, now dialing in on this wonderful animal here. And he really is adorable. He's one of the most, he just looks at you and, I don't know, you just feel something deep inside on a very spiritual level. He lived elsewhere in the United States at times, briefly, correct? Hairpin?
Yes, he did. And that's also a testament to the way that zoos work together. One was to facilitate him having the best opportunity in terms of he lived at White Oak Conservation Center, which is located down in Florida. And then from there, he lived at the Los Angeles Zoo. So people out in Los Angeles got to see him. And then he came here several years ago back to Cincinnati. So back to his home roots.
So you've kind of also illustrated, so a lot of the animal caretakers all over the world really are that connected to enable this sort of thing to happen. From what you're sort of describing, and we'll learn a little more about that. But with the decision to send Harry, was it both influenced by, because as I'm trying to remember the timeline of how this all happened, was it influenced by the Indonesian government's refusal to send more rhinos abroad, as well as the success of his brother Andalas, who has had one successful mating and a second calf due in May?
Exactly. So it was twofold. One, knowing as an institution that his opportunity to be able to reproduce was going to solely lie with him going overseas, and knowing that that's the best thing for him and the best thing for the Sumatran rhino population. That was where the decision came down.
And was it really sped up when that announcement came a few months ago that his brother not only we already knew he had the first calf successfully he had made it and produced a calf, but when you heard that he had fathered another one that was on the way in May, when that became a reality, did that help speed up the process?
It did. And also knowing that there are two other females located at the Sumatran Rhino Sanctuary,
right,
by the name of Rosa as well as Bina, those females, as we say, aren't getting any younger.
Right.
And so it would be great to have the opportunity. Sometimes there's compatibility issues with rhino pairs, and so it would be great for there kind of be choice over there,
mm-hmm,
for those girls. They can choose between Andalas and Hairpin.
Andalas, sorry, I'm not saying his right name right. I got to get that right.
Okay.
When I run into him, it'll be embarrassing if I don't.
I know.
I got to figure that out. So when did Harry start his training for the trip?
Harry started his training for the trip many, many months ago. Some of that training was initially involved with conditioning him for being able to collect a blood sample. So having him cooperatively work with the veterinary technicians, the keepers, as well as his trainers, so that they could get a blood sample from him just on a voluntary basis. And those blood samples were important for what is done and always as animals are shipped from one institution to another or from one country to another. You're screening for different panels of their blood, looking at their blood work, and sharing that information between our zoo as well as the Indonesian colleagues so that they would know they're getting a healthy animal that's coming over.
Okay. And so how long have you been there at the zoo, by the way?
I've been at the zoo since 2002.
Okay. Wow. A long time. So way before he was born.
So until I'm born, which was awesome.
Oh man. So you spent a lot of time with him, and you kind of indicated by that last answer, and I want to learn more about the kind of training that he had. But when you talk about the making it so he's calm enough to basically draw blood on a voluntary basis, my next question had been, how tame is he? And you've spent some time with him. If you can describe, how easy it is to, because you can go on YouTube and see baby rhinos and these people, Judy and John Travers, and this place in Zimbabwe with the rhino in their house. I mean, the things seem very tame, very lovable. But yet you've been there and firsthand. What can you say about Hairpin and his accessibility?
Oh, Harry's an awesome animal. And just like people, everybody's different. Everybody's got their own personality. Everybody's got their own quirks, all that kind of stuff. And Harry just loves the public. Like, he just seems to know he was, like, made to interact with people and kind of be an ambassador for his species. So he takes a lot after his mom, Emmy. And she had a very similar kind of temperament, and I think maybe being the third born, kind of when you're like a human, just a different personality. So he tends to be a bit more laid back, not very high strung at all, and just kind of takes things in stride.
So you've been right there with no barrier between, I mean, I can imagine when he was a baby, but as he grew up, you've been in his pen or wherever he is without any barrier between you and he.
No, barriers are kept up.
Okay.
So there are bars just in case there is anything, just safety-wise. But keepers do go in, and like Paul, who's one of the main keepers, they will go in and be able to rub him down. So he'll get like a nice rubbing, kind of a massage. And that way they can, once he's down, they can inspect, you know, kind of his body and his legs and his feet. But that's usually only done once they're in a laying position.
And so Paul can say, there's a verbal command and he'll go to the laying position?
Usually not a verbal command. It's okay. Just more, they tend to like to be rubbed in their inside leg, in the back. And then once you start rubbing, then they'll start to sit down and then they just get into the moment. So.
And how about when they're babies, though? I mean, they look so precious when they're babies. You must have been able to be real close to him when he was a baby.
Yeah. In terms of right after birth, the vets will go in after they know everything's okay and the mom's had a chance to interact with the calf. They'll go in and actually do the first inspection of them. And sometimes that's even before they've stood for the first time.
Wow.
And then definitely there's a lot of hands-on when they're little. So that way they get used to knowing that being touched by people is an okay thing to be.
Yeah, I can imagine. They look very cute when you see the little, you know, once they're up and when they're up and running around.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean. Well, and the Sumatran rhinos, they have that little toupee on their head, so it's even more adorable.
Because I guess it's like part of, you get this reputation, it's a ferocious animal, and then when you go and you watch the young ones growing up, I mean, I don't see anything ferocious. They seem more like a cow and a dog and a pig all rolled into one sort of...
Right. But they do have a mom that's pretty protective.
Oh, no doubt. And I can see that horn would make you... You know, but yeah, you just want to give him a kiss right on his little face. He's so adorable. But do you have, in terms, you described his personality, I guess, that he's more of a laid back sort of guy. Back to that training. So getting him in and out of the box, what's that all about? I mean, how long? And also, was it like some long distance trips I read were involved with seasoning him for this?
Yes. So Harry already had previous experience with transport because he did go from Cincinnati originally to Florida and then spent time in Florida and then from Florida went to L.A. and then came back to Cincinnati. So he's kind of a world traveler already.
In the same box? Was it already the same box?
Similar dimensions in terms of the outline of the, you know, or the architecture of the box itself. And he was used to then being access to it, so it was put actually inside the barn, so he could go in, eat his food in there, and be used to being in there for periods of time. And then the keepers had an access door, so you might have seen in the pictures where they can actually open the top part of the crate in the front, and that way they can access and put more browse in for him to be able to eat.
So that's the only access, though. They couldn't really get at, I mean, if they needed to do a full-on medical exam while he's in that crate, not possible.
No, not safely. I mean, they do have access, like they can take the back. It does have bars in the back, so they could access him through that. And then again, we also had his main keeper with him, Paul, and right. Then our vet, Dr. Jenny Nolman. So they had all the equipment and everything they would need in case they had to access him.
How big, do you know the dimensions of the, excuse me, do you know the dimensions of the crate?
I don't know the
exact
dimensions.
Okay, I'll get it from Paul.
It's big.
not a problem. And was it fitted so that he could lie down?
He could lie down, but there's not a lot of room. So it's not like you can really stretch out, but you could take a nice little rest. He could get off his feet if he wanted to.
Okay, so he did, and do you know how much of the trip he laid down?
I don't. I know he spent some time, and I know he was ready to get out of the crate when they did finally get him over there, but they said he was a trooper whole way.
He was in that one crate for 53 hours.
Yes.
How do you deal with waste?
Waste, they can access and be able to remove that from the crate itself. So you do have instruments with you to be able, some of the tools that would be used in a barn, you would take along with you, and you can open up and be able to access through the bars.
And he has bedding that you bring along. Is it bedding on the floor, or is the floor hard?
The floor is hard, but there might have been a little bit of hay that could have been on the bottom.
So when he's laying down, there's something soft for him to lay on?
Yeah. Or they could have had a mat. I'm not sure exactly which they which they went with.
And they'd be able to replace that stuff if he made, as he made waste or whatever, they brought more of these supplies with them to accommodate him?
Yes, they did. They brought all of his food. So he got his browse. He got apples, bananas, carrots. And I know, actually, like the USDA inspected each leaf before it was packed and headed off with him.
That's the best. I mean, yeah, at least that's the best best use of our tax dollars I've ever heard. I'm impressed by that. That's outstanding. It really
is. Exactly.
I'm so proud of our government in this one moment. How did the when you think about the water, how did they do the water for him to drink on the trip?
Oh, he's accessed. So he in the front, they can access him water.
Okay.
Just like he would, yeah.
Okay, and then does he respond to specific verbal directions of any kind?
He does, yeah. He is used to, you know, hearing his name, and he's used to, you know, the familiar sounds of his keepers. And so I know that was helpful for him on the trip, because he's used to hearing them talk to him and just having that familiarity.
In addition to Paul, Jenny is her name? Is that the vet? Is that the...
Yes.
And so those two, when you say... So I'm assuming, I'm going to go out on a limb and guess that both of those voices are very comforting and familiar to him.
Yes.
Okay, so both of them on the trip, paint a picture for me, they are right there next to his crate 24/7?
Exactly.
I mean, they're right there. I mean, he is like literally can look right at them if he wants.
Yep, he can.
And was that part of the idea so he could see them? Is that like some reassurance?
There probably is some of that. Rhinos tend to not have the best vision. They tend to rely more on other senses.
Like
so
sound.
Their sense of smell and... Mm. You know, the sound. So both of those would have been familiar. He had familiar smells of his keepers and their sounds.
And they would be talking to him, I'm imagining, quite a bit on that trip.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And
they took turns. So Paul and Jenny took turns sitting by his crate and talking to him the whole way.
But both of them were in the same area where he was all the time. One of them wasn't like in another part of the plane. They were both near his crate at all times.
I think they switched off. There was like a time that they would need some sleep, and
okay.
So I think they could walk up a few steps to like an upper kind of a deck to be able to sleep.
Were there a total of three people from Cincinnati on the flights?
There were a total of three, yes, because our videographer went over.
How many planes did he have to get on?
Oh,
many. More than one. Okay, no problem. We can get that later. That's not a big deal.
Well, yeah, exactly. He originated from here, and he went by truck to Columbus, and then he went by cargo jet to Chicago. Then he went to Anchorage, Alaska. Then he went to Hong Kong, and then to Jakarta. And so he then took two truck trips from Jakarta and a ferry ride to get to Sumatra.
How long was the ferry?
The ferry, it depends. Usually just a regular ferry ride for people takes about an hour
for him a little longer.
Yeah.
Man, God bless him. And I understand when he arrived in Jakarta, is that where more of you guys met him at the airport and the group grew from three to how many?
The group grew with one additional
Dr. Roth.
Our director of crew, as well as who is our vice president of conservation and science here at the zoo.
So she flew by herself to meet them in Jakarta.
Exactly. And to be able to then take that final leg to the Sumatran Rhino Sanctuary.
And she was accompanied with the other three.
Yes.
What an amazing thing. Is Paul still there?
No, they are on their way back.
How long do they stay with them after? Like, it's a twofold question. One is, it's a great question someone had when I told him I was going to talk to you guys. How do you know he's safe there? And second, how long does the Cincinnati folks stay with him before finally saying goodbye?
Well, in terms of knowing he's safe over there, he's totally safe over there. In terms of the Sumatran Rhino Sanctuary, it's located within Wycombus National Park. Again, as I mentioned, there's rhino protection units there that are within the park itself. There's a whole team of staff that are located at the Sumatran Rhino Sanctuary. So they have veterinarians, keepers, and they also have security. So it's not like you can the general public cannot just go into that area.
And can you guys go visit him if you want?
Yes. So, and I'm sure there will be visits to be able to see how he's doing. And
what was it very after that video, that incredible video of him backing out of his crate? I mean, you can just hear the love for him on that video.
Oh, definitely.
How much more time did your people spend with him? And was it a really emotional? I mean, it must have been so hard to say goodbye to him.
It would be. I know it was for the folks that were over there. But I also know that there's a lot of positivity that's going into him being over there. And once you've spent time over there, you know how much. You know they love the rhinos just as much as we do here. And you know they care as much for them. And when you see the care that they do get and how, healthy and happy those animals are, that gives you, he's in a good place.
How much contact or supervision is he getting in the quarantine? And is that quarantine pen what we saw on the video? Is that where he's at?
Yes. That is the pen itself. The sanctuary is kind of set up like a round, so like a circle. And then they have the kind of like pieces of pie that would be the different forest areas as well as the paddocks for the individual rhinos. So he's going to have like his own forested area that he goes out to, natural forest, and then he can come to the paddock that you saw.
Okay.
And they come there on a daily basis. So they bring the animals in on a daily basis, inspect them, and they actually hand feed them browse.
Good.
At that place. And then the animals go out and then they spend the rest of their day out in the forest where they can also eat browse. They can go wallow, just do kind of what rhinos like to do.
But he's in it, so he can do all of that in his own area right now. So that what we saw, that little pen, is only a very small portion of what he's got. He's got a large forested area too?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Immediately. So, that's his quarantine. His quarantine is that.
Right, and he was in the mud wallow, fairly immediately, because they sent a picture of him in the wallow. And also understand that when Andalus went over back in 2007, that was the first time that an animal had been sent back to the home country. So there was a bit more of figuring out protocols and all of that. And so that laid as a template then for sending Harry over.
Right.
And so for our staff, them staying, I think they were there one night and then, had to depart back to the States.
Oh, boy.
But in the past, we had the staff that were over there for Andalus's arrival 3 months prior to him coming in terms of setting up quarantine, because that would have been the first quarantine that was then set up for the animals.
So your people must feel really confident to leave the next day that everything's there.
Exactly.
Or they wouldn't leave, I'm assuming.
No, there's complete confidence in our collaborators that are at the Sumatran Rhino Sanctuary.
Will he be able to meet his brother?
I think he already has, probably by smell and as well by sound. And that's probably what's so amazing over there is they are a very melodic species. A lot of people don't know that. When you hear them in the barn situation, they sound like whales.
Yeah, it's beautiful sound.
Yeah, exactly. And so for him to be able to hear that, he's probably hearing the simangs that are up in the trees and just the sound of the insects that make up just a background noise. It's got to be incredible for him.
It must be. I'm so happy for him. Well, one final question for you, and it's the obvious question, I guess. Back to his mission. How soon could he be making news again, and I could be reading a story relating to the Asia Pacific and about this wonderful new chapter in his life, meaning when's he going to possibly impregnate his first female?
Well, he has, I believe, a 2-week quarantine. So in that time frame, he will be not able to meet with the ladies. and at this point, the staff that's at the Sumatran Rhino Sanctuary, they monitor their females by ultrasound. And so they can tell by looking at the ovaries when those females are ready to breed. So they know when they have a follicle on there. Okay. And they know exactly when's the right time. And what they do then is, because I was saying they have that central area that all the paddocks can go to, then they will bring the females in there for the purposes of introductions. And so at this point, of course, Ratu, she's pregnant. So she's going to be due in May.
Amazing.
And then there's two other females. There's Bina, and then there's Rosa, are the two females.
That he could possibly be hooking up with.
Exactly.
His next girlfriend.
Uh-huh. I know. His chances are good. It's like a 2-to-1 odd. So.
Look at that photo. Come on now. His T takes a mean photo. His chances are fantastic.
I mean, he poses even.
If any of those ladies don't like him, I'd be very, very surprised.
I
don't know.
I think they will, especially with his, you never know how he'll be once he, you know, gets with the ladies, but we kind of feel he's going to be one of the charmers.
They really have their own personality, huh?
Yes, they do.
I believe it. I have a fish, and I have a red-tailed black shark, and she has so much personality, and she's so different than a lot of other people's that you hear about or see pictures. So I know it's incredible how animals are. Well, thank you very much. I've learned so much today. You've been very generous with us, Dr. Monica Stoops. I just ask one favor, and she's part of CREW, Cincinnati Zoo, the Center for Conservation and Research Endangered Wildlife, Hairpin's former home. A loving home, too. Send me some photos. You guys have my emails. I'd love to see him in his mud bath, whatever. Any photos from him on the ground that you can send over, I would just love them. And,
okay. We may send you some X-rated photos, too.
Anything like
hopefully
that.
Hopefully we will, right?
I am rooting for that.
Some procreation going on.
Hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later. And any videos. You guys going to do a movie probably, right? Since you sent a videographer. Got to do something like that.
Exactly. Okay. So hopefully we can have it documented and have people see really what, like you've talked about, what it takes to actually have conservation in action and how it takes the cooperation and collaboration.
Around the world. It was an amazing story. It captured my interest so much. And when I heard it was going to be happening, I just couldn't stop thinking about him and the handling and how it would work. And I didn't ask the really important question. Who pays for all of this? Who paid for all the flights and everything? How does that money work?
Well, in terms of his actual transport, the zoo covered the cost of moving Harry to Indonesia.
Okay.
And that's part of doing business for our zoo. So each year we have to move animals such as manatees, tigers, hippos, and we move those between institutions based on what the species survival plan recommends. And it's usually because of breeding recommendations. So, and, you know, it's not usually across the world. And so that's one of the things that we do. And also for Indonesia itself, so non-governmental organizations, like I said, Yayasan Badak Indonesia, as well as ones here, the International Rhino Foundation, they had monies that had to go into getting all of his area ready. So getting his tract of forest prepared and fenced in and building his quarantine. So all of that was also collaborative. And
that's a great thing. Right. So you're saying both people, both parties are coming together, not just on the scientific and I don't even know, it's a spiritual level, really, to kind of preserve these animals. But also financially, you're both sharing a burden, so to speak.
Exactly. And then it doesn't end there. So, I mean, he does have costs once he's over there. I think it takes about $18,000 U.S. dollars a year to maintain the rhino over at the Sumatran Rhino Sanctuary. And that would involve, you know, the salaries for the staff that's at the sanctuary, his veterinarians, keepers, as well as just upkeep of the fencing and the security.
Right, and the food and all the other logical.
Exactly.
Did any of those companies give you a break, too, on any of your bills for getting him over there? Or do they just charge you a whole bunch of money to ship him?
No, usually, yeah, people are very cooperative, and they also have that spot in themselves that they know something's being done that's good. Cathay Pacific was the airline that the cargo flight that Harry took. And so I know they worked with the zoo for getting a price that would be reasonable for him to go over.
That's cool. Well, that's good to know. People's hearts come in because when you look at this from the outside, as a final note, I mean, I report on so many stories that are tragic and horrible and sad, and this is one of the most amazing collaborative efforts I've ever heard of on an international scale for something so pure and not a money-driven thing at all, something that really comes down to, it's a deeper sort of activity than almost anything else you can put your finger on. There's just something about it. It's a remarkable example of our species. It's the kind of thing that if we were being viewed by people from another world, that's the kind of thing that I think they could respect. That's one of the few things that you really can look at that is, it's just remarkable. There are not words for it, what you participated in by doing something like that with a 1,800-pound living creature, raised, born in captivity. The whole thing is amazing. Please pass along, my very best to all the people who worked with him. Big hug to all of them. I'm really impressed. You can see and hear the love on that video. So I look forward to talking to Paul when he gets back. Seeing some resources from you. And God bless you. Thank you for doing it, Monica. I really am impressed with what you do. You're very smart.
Well, the Cincinnati Zoo is an awesome place to work at, and they put their words into action, and that's important for zoos and for people to know that actually zoos, they do conservation. We do it right off the hand of, you know, what we just did now. I mean,
It's a great example.
It is.
It shows everything. You be safe, and I'll be looking for some emails from you.
Okay.
You be safe. Take care.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks.